show. You receive, but always want more. But the day is coming, the day is near, the day is coming. You know what I mean. The day is...
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Lawrence Michel, an economist, author, and analyst. He is the president of the Economic Policy Institute and is the principal author of the research volume published every 2 years that's widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. His latest report is titled, We're Not Broke, Nor Will We Be. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Michel.
Well, thanks for having me again.
And Lawrence, in Sunday's New York Times opinion section, there's an article about the economy called Our Economic Pickle, and it says, take, for example, Caterpillar, long a symbol of American industry. While it reported record profits last year, it insisted on a 6-year wage freeze for many of its blue-collar workers. Wages have fallen to a record low as a share of America's gross domestic product. But last year's wages fell to a record low of 43.5%. since 2001, when the wage share was 49%. So there you have it. I mean, obviously capital is the beneficiary of increased productivity, but American capitalists are not sharing their bounty with their workers.
Well, that article, which draws heavily on our research, really does pinpoint one of the key dynamics of the last 30 years, and one that has been really salient in the last 10 years, and that is that the wages of most workers have not risen in 10 years, including college graduates as well as high school graduates, even though productivity, the expansion of the pie, has been growing. So that means that there's been a lot of output that has been generated, but most of it has not gone to the vast middle class. The article also points out something interesting that, we're spending all our time dealing with the deficit issues and debt. And should we even resolve all that, we're not really even addressing this fundamental issue, which is how are we going to get shared prosperity for most people, something that has not been the case for 30 years and is definitely not the case now, as incomes are going nowhere for most everybody.
So given that the majority of Americans work for a living and they're not the 1%, maybe they're the 47% that Mitt Romney talked about, but they're certainly not the 1%, why is it then that the 99% cannot get economic justice and the 1% continue to reap the main rewards of the American economy?
Well, the first thing to note is it's not by accident. The economy isn't working well for most people because that's the way it has been designed to work over the last 30 years. So there's been a number of policies that have been put in place that really put working people at a disadvantage when it comes to getting higher wages. And this has been happening since mid-Jimmy Carter, and it's happened under both Democrats and Republicans, I'm afraid to say. So, we have deregulation, which undercut workers' ability to earn a decent living in airlines and transportation. We've seen an erosion of the minimum wage. We've seen a weakening of unions and a failure to update the laws regarding people's ability to secure collective bargaining where they want to do it. We've seen globalization where we are putting workers at all different wage levels in competition with those from abroad, whether it be low-wage workers in China or more skilled technical workers from India or workers in Mexico, et cetera. This all has the effect of undercutting wages for the vast majority. And now it's even the case that 70% of college graduates earn less now than 10 years ago. So this is not an economy that's really working for hardly anybody, except for those who reap returns to financial assets. So that story about Caterpillar earning, huge profits, but not having to, not willing to, nor having to raise wages for its workers is really emblematic of what's happening for the economy as a whole.
Again, I'm speaking with Dr. Lawrence Michel, who is an economist, author, and analyst. He's the president of the Economic Policy Institute and the principal author of a research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. His latest report is titled, We're Not Broke, Nor Will We Be. So is that to say then, Lawrence Michel, that globalism and the new global economy is being used as an excuse by America's corporate elite, the 1%, to basically take all the money themselves? I mean, in effect, you could make the case that globalism has been good for Wall Street and maybe for Chinese and Sri Lankan peasants, but has not been good for working America.
Well, I think globalization could have been done in ways that would have been better for working people here as well as for working people abroad. But when economists tell you that trade is good for our nation, globalization makes us better off, what they fail to pinpoint is that economic theory also says that globalization is going to necessarily increase to greater inequality, so that a lot of people are going to be losers in terms of worse job security, worse wages from globalization, and that globalization makes us all better off only if there's a redistribution from the winners to the losers. And they never seem to want to talk about that redistribution from the winners to the losers to make us better off. As it is, I think the bottom 3/4 of our workforce and households are clear losers from globalization. They potentially could be winners, but we don't do things to make sure that everybody has enough, their health care, a pension, decent wages, et cetera. We could do that. They do that in some other countries, but we don't.
So what's it going to take then? I mean, we have a new Secretary of the Treasury that's been nominated, who's apparently an expert on the budget. He's a Beltway insider. My understanding from having spoken recently with Michael Greenberger, who used to be the with the Commodities Futures Trading Commission in charge of markets at the CTFC, and he knows Wall Street, and he was basically saying that the new Secretary of Treasury is not somebody that understands finance and understands what's happening on Wall Street, and we still have systemic risk in spite of 2008 and the massive meltdown and Dodd-Frank and efforts to curtail the power of the banks. The big banks are more powerful than ever, and that there really is no early warning system in place, and there's still this systemic risk. So if there's another financial meltdown, the one that's, you know, on top of the one that's already crippling us now, we simply don't have the money to bail them out. We don't have the $12 trillion that we used last time to dig our way out of the hole. So do you see this disconnect? We're talking about how American workers aren't getting paid commensurate with the rest of the world and certainly with their employers, and that if they were, that would improve the economy. And at the same time, we have Wall Street in their sort of more than ever laissez-faire recklessness.
Well, I think these are some good points. So first of all, the Secretary of Treasury is going to do what the president wants. And so I think there's always some sense that somehow the people around Obama are the problem rather than what the president himself believes. I'm not sure why anyone would argue that. But it's the economic problems fall into 3 or 4 categories. One, you're right, there's still issues regarding financialization and Wall Street. Related to that are the still ongoing problems in the housing sector. Two, we have major budget issues, and so it's really important that someone be there who's going to negotiate and is going to preserve our social insurance programs rather than undercut them. I'm very fearful about the administration and their commitment to maintaining the integrity of Medicare and Social Security. And third, there's the issue we started off with, which is really, you know, for most people, the salient issue is how are we going to get more jobs and how are we going to get wages to be rising for most people? And so how are we going to have an economic policy that puts that front? and basically what we focus on, and that all economic policy needs to be looked at through the lens of what is this going to do to get more jobs and higher wages for the vast majority.
And why isn't somebody out there making the point that for all of this talk from the deficit hawks and the threat to shut down the government because of having to raise the debt ceiling, that, first of all, the Tea Party people who did it last time, all they succeeded in doing was increasing the deficit because they added to the cost of debt because we got downgraded as a result of their irresponsible behavior. So you've got the Republicans being the wrecking crew, but you don't have a strong argument from the Democrats saying, look, what we really need to get to pay off our debt and to get back on our feet is for everybody in America to be working and getting a decent wage, and that money then is able to, in the form of increased tax revenues, pay off the debt and bring us back into balance. And, you know, it's just incredibly straightforward economics 101. Why isn't somebody making this a case for an alternative to the Pete Peterson mantra of the sky is falling because of the deficits?
Well, I think that there are people making those arguments, but they don't have the political power. So I think there's those who favor those kinds of policies. I think we have to say two things. One is there's sort of a corruption of money in politics that distorts the policy positions of both parties, in my view. And two, the forces that represent the vast majority, civil rights organizations, community groups, the labor movement, are far weaker than they need to be. And so we have a political imbalance that generates a distortion in what we focus on as the key economic issues. So, I say this so that people don't, it's not, you know, be critical of any particular administration or politician. They respond to a political array of forces. So if we don't think they are focused in the right way, then we have to ask, what can happen to build the political organization's strength that are going to make them focus on what the vast majority need?
So, in other words, the public has got a signal very loud and clear what they want. Now,
Don't warn, organize. don't complain, organize.
Right. Well, what about informing the public? I mean, you know, there's so much of the public that seems to have bought the Pete Peterson. I mean, the idea that this Wall Street billionaire is telling everybody that you, working Americans and middle-class Americans, have to tighten your belt, but us titans on Wall Street just free us up and everything will be hunky-dory. I mean, why are people, do you think, drinking that Kool-Aid?
Well, one is that, I think sensible policy lost a huge communications battle over the stimulus. And then in other words, that the idea that government spending or government policy to lower unemployment was ineffective. In fact, it wasn't ineffective. We were just in a really, really deep hole. And we lost that battle, and most people believe that government budgets are like household budgets, and in tough times we have to constrain ourselves, when in fact government budgets need to be looser when household budgets are, in fact, tighter. So, and there's been an intellectual defeat of Keynesianism in the academy, which has another whole story behind it. So there's a lot of stuff going on, and frankly, the political forces that would make that argument are too weak, the argument that you would like to see made. So I think, the information is out there. It doesn't get a megaphone in the the punditry. It's acknowledged sometimes, and even when we have a debate like the fiscal cliff, so let's just recall, fiscal cliff was about a situation where at the beginning of the year we were about to have large tax increases and huge spending cuts, both of which take money out of the economy, shrink demand. And we were afraid of doing that and doing massive deficit reduction. That the whole point was massive deficit reduction was going to throw us into a recession. Now, how many people in the United States, when they heard the coverage of the fiscal cliff, got the message that the problem was massive deficit reduction about to happen? No one got that because that's not the way it was covered. They all thought there was some debt explosion, exactly the opposite. So, I mean, there's a lot of work to be done, and the kind of work that you do is very important. So we need more people to tune into your show.
Well, on that note, Lawrence Michel, I thank you so much for joining us.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Michel, who's an economist, author, and analyst. He's the president of the Economic Policy Institute and the principal author of a research volume published every 2 years that is widely considered the authoritative text on the American workforce, The State of Working America. His latest report is titled, We're Not Broke, Nor Will We Be. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me. And the conversation continues at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.